The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Yesterday, we heard from Ukraine about how the country continues to be impacted by ongoing Russian aggression and their push for more sanctions and weapons from their allies. But what about Russia itself? Is its economy finally beginning to feel the bite from 4 years of prioritising war? Dr. Noah Buckley is assistant professor at the Department of Political Science at Trinity College in Dublin and joins us to take us through what we know about what life is like inside Putin's Russia at the moment. Good evening to you, Noah. How much do we really know about the conditions inside Russia?
I think we know quite a bit, actually. Russians are still traveling around the world, and Russians, you know, often have access to, you know, social media, including Western social media, via the use of VPNs. And we have pretty good reporting also from some sources inside Russia. So I think we have a pretty good picture between those sources and then public opinion surveys and sources of official government data.
Okay. And I suppose, well, then the follow-up to that is, what is life like on the ground? I mean, Russia is a former superpower, but those days are over. Its economy now is about the size of Italy's, to my knowledge. What kind of, I suppose, economic conditions are ordinary Russians experiencing?
I think they're sort of in between, and they're feeling pressure from a lot of different angles. Prices are rising, and sort of everyday life can be a little bit tougher than it was before. Taxes have been raised in some respects. But it's not a calamity. It's not people suffering more than maybe they have been for the last years or decades. And so I think most people are doing fine and, you know, struggling to make ends meet sometimes. Other people are doing really well, benefiting from the sort of war economy that Putin has instituted. So it's sort of a slow degradation and a slow rotting from within that I think many Russians are maybe not fully aware of.
Okay. Surely you would imagine they'd be aware of the number of deaths and casualties, though. You know, the exact figure isn't certain, but people say it could be a million Russians have died or been seriously injured. Does that not impact on the social consciousness that people would be talking, people would know people affected?
I think most people know someone who's been affected or are aware of sort of the broad outlines of how many people have been killed or injured in the fighting. But I think the key is that most people don't really want to be fully informed. This is very, you know, it's painful to sort of understand and really grapple with in your day-to-day life. And so people are, I think, happy not to dig in, not to question the official narrative, not to seek out more accurate information than they might be getting from sort of state sources. So I think people can easily sort of wall themselves off and say, well, you know, I do know some people or, you know, a friend's brother was killed or something like that. But, you know, it's relatively limited. And after all, you know, we have to win this war. We can't lose, and we especially can't lose now that we've gone through so much pain.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I've often heard people say that about the Russian people, and it's considered to be that way. That's how they view things. They don't want to know too much because they've never really had a free, fair, democratically elected government that they trusted or felt that they had any influence over, you know, in living history. And because of that, they tend to shrug off what their government does to a certain extent because they feel they don't have any real way of influencing it. Is that what's going on?
Yes, I think it's a combination of that where they're so used to, people are so used to living in an authoritarian regime, like you say, that mm-hmm. where, you know, it's politics and sort of geopolitics, especially, that's none of my concern, right? So like, I'm focused on, you know, my family, my job, my life. And I think that's a very natural thing that's not limited just to Russians. And then when you combine that with the fact that it's very painful to face up to, you know, these deaths and what's happening to the country. And so I think it's very natural for anyone, not only Russians, to say, well, you know, we're not going to, you know, pay too much attention. Let's not dig in. Let's just continue with our lives. And, you know, people at the top will take care of it.
Control what you can control. So would you say that there is very little dissent there, that there is very little opposition, that there is very little pushback against the Ukraine war?
I would say there's very little organized dissent or opposition. The regime has made sure that, you know, there's no sort of publicly prominent opposition or dissent that, you know, can get on the airwaves or get access, that people can get access to on the internet. So as far as anything being organized, there's very little, but there's local sort of opposition to local matters, failures, government failures. There's groups who are sort of forming together to say, you know, we need to support our sons or, you know, relatives who are off fighting in Ukraine. So I don't think we should assume that the society is completely atomized or indifferent to what's going on, but there are just, at the moment, no sort of means for people to organize and try to get something done.
So some dissent, but not gaining traction. Is that a good, is that a fair assessment?
Yes, it's not allowed to, it's not able to gain traction, and people are very wary of, you know, taking any sort of action that could get them in trouble.
Is there kind of imminent risks, in your view, Noah, to Russia's economy, though, in terms of oil prices, in terms of these threats of sanctions? I know the EU has recently debated whether or not they would use the frozen Russian assets as a loan to fund Ukraine. There are risks economically for Russia that this ongoing war is causing, isn't there? And if they become more severe, if those risks to the economy or effects on the economy get worse, does that threaten Putin in any way?
I think the risks are not so immediate. A lot of damage is being done to the economy, the Russian economy, in the medium and long term. And these are things that Russia is going to have to deal with, grapple with for, I think, a very long time. But it seems very unlikely, given what we know at the moment, that there's going to be some sort of collapse or some sort of break that is going to require the regime to change its approach to the war.
Well inflation is getting worse, isn't it? And that tends to sour with the populace pretty quickly, certainly in Western countries.
Yeah, inflation is not good, but it moderated a bit in 2025. It's higher than I think they would like, and it can be painful, but it's not hyperinflation. Unemployment is almost non-existent, and there's a lot of money flowing from the state into particular pockets of society as they sort of get this war economy, try to keep it going. So it's a very uneven and corrupt and sort of misdirected economic power. But I think the idea that people are going to sort of rise up over, 6% inflation is probably just not realistic.
And you mentioned about one part of the Russian attitude is, well, we've already come this far, we can't lose now. And that seems to me to be also part of the Ukrainian attitude as well, that they don't want to give up because they've already it's cost them so much already in terms of lives, in terms of destruction, in terms of all of that. That really is the great conundrum for Putin, isn't it? Even if the sanctions get worse, even if the economy gets worse, at what point would it come a tipping point that would say to him, we're better off to walk away than to keep trying to win? Because that's a very difficult line for him to walk, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. But at the same time, this is really, Putin initiated this war. The Russian people didn't, ask for it. And even the other elites around Putin didn't ask for it. So I think it's up to him to sort of back down and figure out how he could sell some sort of end to the war. to the rest of Russian society. But it's very clear that that he is nowhere near that. It's as clear as it is possible for us to tell from here that he is fully committed personally to seeing this through, no matter what costs there are.
It reminds me a little bit of the Israeli situation, Netanyahu's political survival and Israel's political position are closely linked. Could the same be said of Putin and Russia?
I think so. And I think, as far as we can tell, I think Putin really does view this as an existential question for Russia. As hard as it is for sort of us to see this as, you know, there was a threat to Russia that he had to take action. I think that's not true, but I think he sees it that way. And so he's really maybe, you know, acting to defend his country and to defend his legacy and make sure that, you know, he can.
So do you think that is true for him, that the fear of NATO, the fear of Europe and the eastern borders of Europe becoming fortified as a threat to Russia is part of this? Do you think that plays a bigger role here for him rather than kind of Russian imperialism, that he wants to see the expansion of the old sort of USSR sort of idea?
I think they all sort of blend together. I mean, I hesitate to sort of try to read Putin's mind. I think that's not always a great idea. But it does seem like from what he said that there's no distinction between those things. Maybe he didn't think that, you know, NATO tanks were going to roll across Russian borders anytime soon, but he sees, you know, the Russian nation, so to speak, as being something larger that he had to protect from an encroaching European sort of NATO and EU power, and that there's some civilization that he views Russia as having that he had to defend.
Okay. Look, thank you very much for those insights. We do appreciate it. This is, of course, the first day of the fifth year of this war, and we're very grateful to Dr. Noah Buckley there, Assistant Professor at the Department of Political Science in Trinity College in Dublin.
Thank you very much.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays at 4 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.